happy Monday. You know, fuck it. I want to say happy Monday. We already started off with an F-bomb 10 seconds into the show, less. I hacked off my mustache today, and I'm very upset about it. Some people are upset that the Sixers lost to the Knicks in Game 1. I am one of those people, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. Some people have mentally rebounded because the Phillies pulled off yet another sweep, more wins over the weekend. We'll get into that as well. But I have to start with a little bit of just like being very genuinely sad. I've had facial hair for a year, two, and I somehow accidentally hacked off part of my mustache this morning, and I'm really upset about it. And I'm realizing how much rounder my face is, and it's genuinely upsetting to me. And anyway, I appreciate everybody being here. We're going to get into it today because, listen, I think we all knew that the big story of the weekend was going to be the Sixers. And I think that we all knew that the big story of the weekend as it pertained to the Sixers is they're in for a long series against the New York Knicks. And I have to be honest with you, and listen, we're all about honesty here at Crossing Broadcast. I'm fine with this being a long series. I know that in theory, you'd like to get through a sweep. You'd like to get through a five-game series, and you move on. Joel Embiid, he kind of tries to get himself healthy. You maybe pull off a couple of big wins where he gets to sit during the fourth or something like that. It's not happening. There was no matchup available in the first round that was going to be a four- or five-game series for the Sixers in their favor. And the Knicks did exactly what the Knicks needed to do. They were abusive on the offensive glass. I mean, the Knicks absolutely embarrassed the Sixers in every way, shape, and form on the glass. And obviously, there are a few people that need to be taken to task for their performance or lack thereof in Game 1 when it comes to Philadelphia. But you have to give the Knicks their flowers that they executed with exactly what you would expect them to. They dominated the boards, specifically getting themselves second, third, fourth opportunities on the glass. The Sixers didn't have anyone who could even remotely combat it. They had no one, or at least Nick Nurse could employ no one on the glass that could combat a Mitchell Robinson, who, by the way, like, I think going into the series, I said, you know, the Knicks, no Julius Randle. And obviously, Julius Randle's not, like, a massive human being, right? But, like, I said, I don't really think they have a big that can go toe-to-toe with Joel Embiid, a healthy-ish Joel Embiid, which he very clearly is not. He caught a knock again in this game, went down. A lot of people thinking that, you know, oh, shit, we're losing Embiid. He's out. Season's over. Series over. I started getting all the texts from my buddies. I'm sure a lot of you did as well, where we were getting the season's over, series is over, Joel Embiid's down again. I mean, I don't know. Some people, I genuinely wonder sometimes if they pay attention to basketball or if they pay attention to the Sixers, but like Joel Embiid being hurt is just par for the course. And quite frankly, it's just part of what you expect as a Sixers fan. If you go into this at this point, into a postseason run, and you are a delusional fan who sits back and says like, hey, this is going to be great. Joel Embiid, he's going to be healthy this time. Like, you're setting yourself up to get hurt. You're setting yourself up to be emotionally scarred by this team again. Joel Embiid can't stay healthy. He'll probably end up missing a game this series with gastroenteritis, like he has virtually every time that he's made the postseason. But when he was in, and when he wasn't moping, but when he was in, there were times that he looked good. The knee injury, the tweaking, where he went down after a dunk that he threw to himself off the backboard, almost like a little Vince Carter in the 2002 All-Star game. A little bit like that, right? I think Karl Anthony Towns also like has started to work this into his game. And Craig's going to pull up the video here. And we don't care about monetizing this show today. So, Craig, running off of that Jersey internet. There we go. Now it's a little bit smoother. There it is. He throws it off the backboard to himself. Jam. And you're like, oh, yeah, there it is, baby. And then what happens? Joel Embiid goes down. Do you remember the dunk against it was Toronto, right, where he did the windmill dunk and he came down a few years ago? And you're like, this is just tempting the fates. That play shouldn't be tempting the fates. It shouldn't really matter. But as soon as it happens, you just go, eh, something bad's going to happen. And it did. And Embiid got hurt. And to his credit, he came back in. He gutted it out. He did exactly what your franchise center is supposed to do. But at the same time, like, he doesn't look like himself. And I would even go so far as to say he looks like 60%. He's definitely not 80. You want to say 70 on a good night, maybe. But after tweaking the knee, look like 60% Joel Embiid. And can you win and think, like, if you're the Sixers, right, and you've got a 60% Joel Embiid, do you have a legitimate chance of winning the series? Yes, you do. And I see here Chevy, and maybe Chevy's getting the wrong read here on where I'm at. We haven't gotten all the way into it yet. But Chevy said, I don't understand how anyone can who watched that game came away thinking the Sixers aren't right in that series. They are. But so much of it is predicated on Joel Embiid. And the reason is something else that we're about to get into here. The rest of the team, whoever the fuck those guys are, whoever some of those guys are supposed to be, because they had no show after no show after no show up and down the lineup. Now, Tyrese Maxey, fantastic. Tyrese Maxey looked every bit like the guy who's fearless around the rim, who finishes the best at the rim for a guard since Allen Iverson. Looks every bit like that guy. And even had a couple of moments later in that game where he stepped into a three in rhythm, pulled the trigger, nailed it, got the Sixers back in. I need more of that from Tyrese Maxey. We talked about this a week or two ago, but like, when the game is on the line, who do you lean on if you're the Philadelphia 76ers? Do you go to Joel Embiid, who's the reigning MVP, but is hobbled? Or do you go to Tyrese Maxey? And I said, every time and twice on Sunday, I want Tyrese Maxey to have the last shot in the game. I want Tyrese Maxey with the ball in his hands because he's a more dynamic player. He can pull up from beyond the arc. He can get himself into a mid-range J. He can get himself to the rim. And if your thought is, oh, well, you get it to Joel because maybe he can draw a foul, so can Maxey. Maxey driving with reckless abandon can absolutely get himself to the line and potentially even finish the play. Okay? So all of this is to say, I think that they are still in this thing. Mitchell Robinson isn't going to have the same kind of game that he did in game one throughout a seven-game series. And to be clear, I think this very well could go the distance. And like I said at the start, I don't think that there's anything particularly wrong with that. I really don't. I think that if you're the Sixers, while you would like to get through it quickly and get Joel some rest, there's something about learning how to win as a team in the postseason. And I think that that'll be really big for this team. I think it can help to kind of help them mesh, help them gel a little bit better, figure out how to win in the playoffs. You know, there were moments in the game that you had to sit back and say, like, they are doing a lot of things right. What did they do particularly well? They kept Jalen Brunson in check virtually the entire game. Like, genuinely, they did. And you could come back and think that, like, hey, Brunson down the stretch ended up, like, he still ended up with a nice final line, gets 22 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. You know, he had a steal. He impacted the game in a variety of ways. He shot 8 for 26. You legitimately took their best player and shut him down from the field. Now, when you kind of go back and forth on, like, are the Sixers in the series, are they not, you're not going to be able to shut down Jalen Brunson in every game, I don't think. I could be wrong. I'm not, but I could be wrong. And if you're able to do this to Jalen Brunson, say, 2 or 3 times in the series, well, then you're going to put yourself in a really good position to win it. Even if Jalen Brunson comes back in game 2 and he goes off for 40 points, I look up and down the rest of their roster and I say, all right, where are the points going to come from otherwise? Is Josh Hart going to shoot 4 for 8 from 3-point range? No. No, I don't think so. Is McBride going to put up 21 points? By the way, his plus minus, 37. Plus 37 for McBride. Like, let's get real. Like, that's not going to happen again. Bogdanovich was fine. Efficient, shot 50% from downtown. But again, when we come back to it, I think the Sixers are in good enough position to make this a series And if Joel Embiid is remotely healthy, they'll be fine. But, you know, Ford points out here on YouTube, the issue is the Sixers' point differential without Embiid. Hey, newsflash, it's been this way his entire career. It has been this way. This has been a talking point year in and year out, the entirety of his Sixers' career when he's able to play. The team is exponentially better with him on the floor. Why? Because he's an MVP. Because he is that impactful of a player. But they have guys on this team who no-showed. They have guys on this team who flat out chose not to appear in New York, that when the brightest lights were on at Madison Square Garden, they hid. They went and they died in a corner. And I'm looking at two guys in particular who were an absolute embarrassment. Embarrassment. For what they're supposed to do, we're not going to necessarily base this entirely on salary. For one, we can. But for one, it's just your role. The two guys I was most disappointed in, and I don't know how the fuck you can actually be disappointed in one of them, because he just is a perpetual disappointment. But I want to get to the guy that you maybe don't expect as much, right? Because there's a certain max contract guy who didn't show up, and we'll get to him in a minute. But Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield gets brought in here to be a sharp shooter, to be a guy who can shoot 40-plus percent from downtown as a volume three-point shooter, by the way. Not just like, oh, you know, he hit 2 of 3, and he played, you know, 8 solid minutes for us. He played 15 solid minutes, and he was a really good two-way player, and he hit 2 of 3 spot-up Jays from the corner. That's not what you're looking for from Buddy Hield. You're looking for Buddy Hield to be a guy who, like, when you need a shot, can make a shot. When you need him to pull the trigger from downtown, he gets the job done. Buddy Hield played 11 minutes in game one. 11. He took 2 shots. One of those shots was from downtown. And that's it. He had an assist. Whoop-dee-doo. That's the contribution you got from Buddy Hield. One of your big acquisitions around the trade deadline was Buddy Hield. And I sang the praises of the move. Because you keep coming back to it. Like, every year it's like, oh, Buddy Hield, he got dealt to another team. Why do teams keep dealing a 40-plus percent three-point shooter in a league where so much of your success is predicated on the ability to hit from downtown? He no-showed game one. He looks afraid to shoot. It's his job. That is his one function on the team. Imagine back a few years ago when J.J. Redick was the guy coming off the screen, right? Playing a beautiful 1-2 game with Joel Embiid. Imagine if J.J. Redick showed up for game one and just decided, you know what, I'm taking 1-3. J.J. was a huge defensive liability. Buddy Hield, not particularly defensively skilled. Imagine if J.J. Redick played 11 minutes in a game and then took 1 shot from downtown, missed it, and that's it. 2 shots total in a game. That can't happen. I'm not going to, like, go out on a limb and say, hey, you know what, Buddy Hield, that's the way to go. Let's get Buddy Hield more engaged, more involved. Listen, maybe his confidence is shot. Maybe Buddy Hield would benefit from having more minutes. I'll throw it out there right now. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Buddy Hield get a start. See if you can get him back in the flow. Get him in rhythm. Because if you're going to win this series, you are going to need contributions from guys like Buddy Hield. You cannot win this series with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey alone, and then, you know, Kelly Oubre playing well enough and Kyle Lowry turning back the clock. You can't win a series like that. You certainly won't go deep in the playoffs with that. You need guys like Buddy Hield to show up and to play big minutes and to hit big shots. Chevy asks over on YouTube, are you really drawing up offensive plays for Buddy? Maybe. Maybe a couple early. Figure it out. Joel is going to get his shots. Maxey's going to create his own shots. Sometimes, yeah, you do sacrifice a couple of possessions to try to get a guy an advantageous shot. You really do. Like, sometimes it's worth it. And in this case, again, like, I think Buddy Hield has the ability to drop 15 a game to give you a couple 20-point games just because he shoots so efficiently? Yeah, like, yeah, I'm not opposed to it. Listen, you know, shoot the messenger, I guess. But, like, Joel Embiid down the stretch in that game, I could make a case that in the fourth quarter, the last 6 minutes or so of the fourth quarter, Joel Embiid just chucking shit up that like was hitting front rim, where he had no legs under him. Like, those are wasted possessions.
Oh, but Rats, you know, he's the leading scorer. He's the former reigning MVP.
Great. That's not the game. Joel Embiid doesn't look like himself. He shouldn't be taking those shots down the stretch. If every shot is coming up short and the guy doesn't have the legs, yes, he needs to be in there because the gravity is important. His ability to pull and to separate defenses is critical, vitally critical. It creates space on the court. I'm not advocating for removing Joel Embiid late in games. But I am saying that, like, yeah, in theory, if you had a Buddy Hield early in the game feeling a little bit better about himself, and you could put him in the fourth to hit a couple of big shots, it would be great. You know, they went back to Nick Batum a little bit. You know, Nick Batum played 26 minutes. 1-for-4 from downtown. Nick Batum gives you a lot on both sides. But, like, I think we saw what the peak Nick Batum game was against Miami. You can't expect that to happen again. You can maybe expect him to hit a couple more shots. I'm not going to put this on Nick Batum. Can we make the argument that maybe a Paul Reed should have played more minutes than 11 because he's better on the glass than the max contract guy we're about to excoriate here on the show? Maybe. I could maybe make the case, although there are times where Paul Reed doesn't look like he's ready to meet the moment. I did see, I don't know where it's at now, Craig. Somebody said earlier in the chat, I believe, like, give Ricky Council some minutes. I don't think they're going to. They played 9 guys. They limited the rotation to 9 players. Do I think Ricky Council is going to see a lot of minutes in game 2? I don't. No, I don't. I don't see that at all. Listen, we got to give the flowers. You know, I talked about it before. Got to give flowers in this one. Kyle Lowry, 39 minutes. 5 of 9 from the field, 4 of 7 from downtown. Making good veteran plays. He's a total pain in the ass to play against. You can tell that he gets under the Knicks' skin. He gets under everybody's skin. I know that the maestro Kyle Scott is probably out there like having himself like a little bit of a bonfire, a little celebration of sorts for Kyle Lowry. But like, Lowry played a good game. Can't be upset with him. Kelly Oubre had a good enough game. Do you maybe want to see him get a few more shots? Maybe. Sure. That's where the offensive glass comes into play. So we're getting your asses absolutely handed to you on the O-glass is a problem. You know? They didn't create enough second chance opportunities. And if you do, maybe you do get a Kelly Oubre a few more shots. But we listen, this all comes back to one guy. And it's not Joel Embiid. Okay? Because as I said before, Joel Embiid was already coming into the series wounded. Wounded. Joel Embiid tweaked his knee in the game. Came back and gutted it out, right? This isn't on Joel Embiid. Shot selection in the fourth quarter, coming up short on a bunch of shots, and the team deferring to him in those moments, not ideal. That's more of a tactical decision and problem. But the guy that this falls on is Tobias Harris. And there's no sugarcoating it. And that Jimmy Smith account, the definite Tobias Harris family burner, I don't. Jimmy Smith's, I believe, went private too, so we can't even see if Jimmy was out there putting things into the ether around the game. But Tobias Harris makes $39 million. 39. 3-9. 3-for-7 from the field, 7 points. 1-for-4 from downtown. 9 rebounds. Big rebounds by Tobias. $39 million. 7 points. There's where you lost the game. There's where you can see the difference between a team that gets the most out of a max player and a team that is absolutely hamstrung. A team that has the proverbial ball and chain around them and being dropped into the Hudson River. All right? This is like concrete shoes. I don't remember which mobster it was. Remember, they put the guy's feet in concrete, the blocks, and then they drop him in the river. Rest in peace, whoever that was. Tobias Harris is that to the Sixers. He weighs them down. I'm not saying that, like, there's another max player out there that would have been a good change of scenery candidate to swap with at the deadline, and quite frankly, nobody wants Tobias Harris. All right. The rumor is out there, oh, well, the Pistons want Detroit, or the Pistons want Tobias Harris. Great. Take him, please. Please, in the offseason, take him. End our national nightmare. Take this man away. Free up that money. Reinvest it. Here's the thing. I am very much a believer that between Joel Embiid being healthy-ish over the course of a season and Tyrese Maxey continuing to take further steps forward, I could even be sold on the idea of not having a third massive star, right? Because having three stars doesn't guarantee you anything. You know, you look at the Clippers, right? The Clippers have Harden. They have PG-13. They have Kawhi. There are injury concerns. Just because you have three guys under contract as max guys doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a legitimate contender or a team that can take that next step. So I don't want to get it twisted. But $39 million sure buys you a few really good parts, buys you a few really good starters that can fill this thing out, that you don't have to rely on a Buddy Hield, that you'll get a couple of guys who actually can contribute in a meaningful way, that you don't have to worry about them getting gun-shy, like for whatever reason it appears Buddy Hield is right now, that you don't have to rely on a guy that you picked up off the scrap heap in Kyle Lowry, who, again, played a very nice game, a marvelous game. But, like, I'm not relying on Kyle Lowry to give me 18 points per game in the playoffs. I'm just not. I'm not expecting him to shoot over 50% from downtown. And I think if you are, you're setting yourself up for a lot of disappointment. And I don't think that that's like a ridiculous take to have. So let's distill all of this, all right? We looked at the Knicks. We looked at the Sixers. Like, there is a very clear path to being able to get through this series in six games, maybe seven. Six is obviously better. Finish it on your home court. The Sixers have to be better on the glass, getting themselves second opportunities. And they have got to, for the love of God, they have to be more active on the glass in the Knicks end to prevent the Knicks from getting so many second chance opportunities. In a series that could be determined by one or two possessions, continuously giving the Knicks more and more opportunities to find rhythm and to get shots, it will burn you. And if the disparity, if the rebounding disparity is as bad as it was in game one, again in game two, it's going to be a legitimate problem. That's when I sit back and I say the Sixers won't be able to win the series, right? Now, again, I think in theory, if we're going head-to-head, if you're asking me straight up, do I think the Sixers can win the series? I do. I think they will win the series. But you can't lose the battle on the boards by 22. That can't happen. 55 boards to 33. Defensive rebounds are relatively close, 32 to 24. But the offensive rebounds is insane, 23 to 9. That's where this is going to be won. And if you're Nick Nurse, you have to make a legitimate decision. I don't know how you do it, but if Tobias Harris is going to look as lost and as dazed and confused as he does, I'm not advocating for Paul Reed to get some massive uptick. I'm not advocating for Ricky Council. I'm not advocating for really anybody who didn't get significant minutes in this game to get more. But you do have to ask yourself the question at some point, is it worth having Tobias Harris play the minutes that he did, 31 minutes, if he's going to provide you so little? I don't think it is. Who's the savior? Who comes in to bail them out? It's not Mo Bamba. I don't know. I really don't. I see a lot of people kind of weighing in here. Craig. You betray me. You betray me. I need to know what game that was from. February 8th, 2019. Who did the Sixers play? That must have been right after the trade. When he was like the fourth option, right? Wasn't that after they had Jimmy? I think. Maybe. Craig will find it. But that was a Craig bomb. Again, that was 5 years ago, guys. Like, let's be real here. It's 5 years ago. Let's see. Tobias scores 25, even though Jimmy takes more shots. There's a scenario where Jimmy goes bonkers like T.O. and Jerry Rice's final game for the Niners. Yeah, sounds about right. Tobias, when they first got him, was fine. He got the new contract and he fell apart. Wow, look at all of this. Time to trade Tobias's negotiating rights and a pick to New Orleans for Drew Holiday. So see, I wised up within 3 months. So that means I've been consistent about Tobias Harris for 5 years. I had a very little window there when they first got him that I thought, hey, this guy actually has some good skills. This guy can hit some shots from downtown. This guy can rebound pretty well. He's got decent enough court vision. It's all falling apart. It took me 3 months to wise up. And I've been on the same corner for the last 5 years. So Ford, to quote Jay-Z, can kiss my whole asshole. You don't like my lyrics, you can press fast forward. Anyway, I think the Sixers are going to win. I do. But I think it's going to go 6 or 7. And if you don't have the stomach for it, if you are scared of the Knicks, go get a dog. Let's turn the page. There was a report that came out that Howie Roseman is looking to trade up in the draft. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I have not done any research into the draft. I genuinely don't care who the Eagles go after. The Eagles don't particularly draft well. That's not Howie's game. It has not been Howie's game. There are a lot of questionable-ish picks. There are some picks that people got very excited about who haven't contributed in a truly meaningful way to this team. If Howie wants to trade up because they have an extra second, it's totally fine. I hope that whatever they go after is a position of legitimate need. I hope that they're not going to trade up for a skill position. And I will say once again, and I think I said this last week, if there is any thought to trading A.J. Brown, they need to kill that thought. And if by some horrible, horrible, horrible thought, the Eagles decided that they were going to trade A.J. Brown and then try to trade up to draft a receiver, absolutely not. No. If they want to go back and they want to play in the trenches again, they want to go take a lineman on either side of the ball, fine, I guess. You want to go after a linebacker? Is there a good linebacker in this draft? I don't know. I haven't looked. Go get a legitimate cornerback in the first round? I'm fine with that. Very clearly, you're going to need one or two or three. So if Howie wants to trade up, by all means, have at it, fella. Live your best life. I can't imagine that there's anybody who's watching the show right now who would advocate for them staying put or trading down. I'm guessing this came from crossingboard.com. Craig says, if Roseman wants a cornerback at number 22, as many around the league believe he could, he might have to give up. He might have to move up again. Per sources, he's already been calling around, gauging what a trade-up might look like to be prepared for what has become a near-annual tradition, him trading up. It's also worth noting that Roseman, who's been Philly's GM since 2010, has never drafted a corner, tight end, running back, or safety in round number one. Good pull, Craig. Well done. You've redeemed yourself. You handsome bastard. Got him to smile on the other side of the glass. Last thing I want to get to. It's not a long show today because I have to come back here on Thursday. Kinker's out again. And I will carry the show in the best way I know how. The Phillies have started to pull their collective heads out of their keisters. We now have back-to-back sweeps. They embarrassed the White Sox. They had multiple games with a no-hitter that went relatively deep in the game. And that included Friday night. Friday night I was at that game, the Turnbull game. My wife's school choir did the national anthem, so that was pretty cool. Our kids had a blast at the game. The Phillies embarrassed the White Sox, 3 consecutive games. You had a no-hitter that went, 7 1/3, I believe, with Zach Wheeler. The bats are coming around. Now, in fairness, the White Sox are a double-A team masquerading as a Major League Baseball team. But if you've been waiting for the Phillies to come around, they've at least done it against teams that they need to do it against. So it's 6 straight wins for the Phils, sweep of the Rockies, a dominant sweep against the White Sox. And now you have to start kind of taking a better look at, I guess, what's to come. They've got the Reds coming up next. The Reds are over 500, 12-9. Then they've got the Padres after that. The Padres are having a decent enough season in the NL West, sitting at 500. The Phillies' rotation has been absolutely sensational. And I know that last week when this came up, it was, hey, you know, it's not sustainable, and I'm going to stick to it. I do feel like the rotation is going to be something that, like, if it can carry them right now until the bats heat up, and bats, again, they heated up a bit against Chicago, if the pitching can give them a chance to win every night, they're going to be A-OK. They're going to be totally fine. But you can't expect them to all go out pitching like they're Cy Young candidates, right? That won't work. That doesn't work. So if you're a Phillies fan and you expect to see the Phillies maintain the kind of pacing that they have to this point in the year, you will ultimately be sorely disappointed. However, there are positives that you can take away. The bats heating up is obviously the big takeaway from the weekend. And seeing the lineup kind of get themselves back into some sort of flow has to make you feel at least a little bit better about their chances of doing some significant damage here down the, you know, over the next month or so. I do still worry about Nick Castellanos, as I'm sure a lot of people do. In that game on Friday, the funny thing was, you know, there were a bunch of times where he was taking some swings. He was making decent enough contact. He hit a couple out to the warning track. But he still doesn't look totally like himself. I guess, you know, like, look, if we have to maybe call an early season MVP at the plate, we're probably looking at Brandon Marsh, right? Marsh was a guy that to some extent they were thinking about potentially platooning, and he's played really well this year. He's slugging 561. He's hitting over 280 on the season. Like, he's having a good enough year. But, like, let's go back to the rotation for a second. Like, let's get it back to the rotation and just kind of, like, try to put into perspective just how good they were. So they've pulled off two sweeps in a row. Over that time, 44 and two-thirds innings pitched. They've only allowed 22 hits and 3 earned runs. That's it. Strikeout to walk ratios, like 48 to 8. They've been absolutely dominant. So, again, when I come back to this idea that, like, hey, it's not sustainable, when you can ride the hot pitching staff, ride the hot pitching staff. Take it for all it's worth. And we'll see here over the next few games, you know, what they're going to do. I think the one thing that's kind of looming out there for them is that Taiwan Walker is going to be coming back. And I think it could be this week or next week. I think it's this week because he made progress over the weekend. So it's this week. If Taiwan Walker comes back, I cannot fathom a scenario where you want Taiwan Walker back in this rotation, right? Like, everything's going so well. I don't know where he goes. I genuinely have no idea. I know it was a lot of money they gave him and that you can't just relegate him to the bullpen. But given how everything's gone so far, like, I don't want Taiwan Walker back in the rotation. Rock with what you got so far. It's brought you here. It's gotten you this far. Two sweeps in a row against inferior teams. Why not? I think it's totally fine. Let's all get excited. Right? Maybe? Anybody excited? I see BW saying Mrs. Moniak every day. Why? Just why? Why? We can also take a moment here to acknowledge that Trey Turner is, well, as you would expect, is an absolute monster on the Bates paths. And he's now stolen, I believe it's 40 consecutive bases going back to last year. I know that we joked like 2 weeks ago, do we have to do another standing ovation for Trey Turner? But no, the answer is no. Trey Turner is starting to look like himself. We can all feel a little bit better about it. And I think I'm ready to roll out for today. I think I'm going to try to get, we'll see who it is on Thursday. There will be somebody here on Thursday. It might be somebody fun, or I might just flip the camera to Craig. I will tell you that tonight, one good thing that's going, and it's very positive, is tonight, the Snow the Goalie crew, we're going to be doing a show that came up at the last possible minute. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Snow the Goalie, we're going to be doing a show from a fantasy draft. It's an NHL playoffs fantasy draft. Let me see if I can find the details, because I don't even know if it's open to the public or who's supposed to go, but we'll have it going on all the Snow the Goalie channels tonight. but it's at, I think it's Brooklyn Bowl in Fishtown. So we've got that coming tonight. I think we're going to start the show around 5:45. I think. Maybe. Sounds about right. We'll be looking for people to help us draft. There you go. Bundy. Snow the goalie. We're going to hit the road tonight. And it's the Snyder Hockey Fantasy Draft. And we're going to do a watch party for the playoffs. So it'll be down at Brooklyn Bowl in Fishtown. And we're going to be soliciting the advice and the help of our Snow the Goalie listeners and Crossing Broad readers and all that. And so if you're listening to the show or you're watching the show live and you want to come support, I think it's – I don't actually know if it's open to the public. It might be. And if not, just stand outside and yell and cheer or something. But follow Snow the Goalie over on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll have that show going live as well. We'll offer some thoughts up on the end of the Flyers, not the Flyers season, because we talked about it when it fell apart, but we'll offer up some thoughts on the comments of Danny Briere and John Tortorella at the end of the year. Interesting, the Torts doesn't do exit interviews. There's a whole big thing that came out of that, but some thoughts on next year and what that could look like. So we'll have a little bit of that, a little bit of talk about the playoffs. The one thing that I guess I would like to just touch on here really quickly before we can go is the playoffs this weekend in the NBA and the NHL. Was anybody like really that entertained this weekend? There were a lot of blowouts. There were a lot of lopsided games. Boston, I mean, absolutely embarrassed Miami. We knew that it was going to happen without Jimmy Butler. But they pull off a 20-point win that was never really in doubt. Clippers blew out the Mavericks. The Bucks destroyed the Pacers. It was a weekend where home teams went undefeated, or at least a Sunday where home teams went undefeated. The NBA playoffs, as much as I love them, we need a little bit of intrigue, and maybe the Sixers can get it started tonight. Maybe they can be the first team to pick up a win on the road. Maybe. Hopefully. I want a little bit of intrigue. I ultimately like to see the best teams in the league go head-to-head, but like at least let's take a slightly interesting path getting there. All home teams winning doesn't help anybody. It certainly doesn't help grow the game, and it certainly doesn't create intrigue or aid in the increase of TV ratings. And then on the NHL side of things, like nothing has really stood out so far, but it was much of the same. You know, home teams undefeated over the weekend. So, like, I don't know. I look at the Maple Leafs and Bruins game tonight. If you're looking for one to watch, that's probably it. I think Boston's going to take a 2-0 lead, which will, again, feed into this like idea that it's really not that fun. The playoffs haven't been that exciting yet. No big upsets. If I had to pick a series where I'm thinking like, hey, good chance that you see a road win, I want to think it's Vegas. I want to see Vegas take Dallas deep in that series. It's entirely possible that Vegas could walk away with an upset in that series. But we'll be back on Thursday. I'm going to see who's going to show up here on Thursday. I guarantee you, I think I'm going to have, it's either going to be one or two people hopping on Thursday's show. So it should be a lot of fun. Make sure you tune back in here on Crossing Broad channel, the Crossing Broad YouTube. And if you haven't done so, go follow the show wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, not Google Podcasts. Amazon Music is fine. YouTube Music is fine. But go subscribe to the show, to Crossing Broadcast, and I'll be back on Thursday. So for Craig on the other side of the glass, for Kevin Kincaid, wherever he is, I'm Russ. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for watching, maybe even listening to Crossing Broadcast. We'll talk to all of you on Thursday.